Do you want to learn interesting psychological information in an easy, straightforward, and entertaining manner? Then you need to listen to The Shrink Is In, a podcast show produced and hosted by Dr. Howard Gurr. Dr. Gurr is a practicing licensed psychologist for more than 25 years in New York State, and now he is available to you on the internet. Now, here's Dr. Howard Gurr.
Hey, it's Dr. Gurr with another episode of The Shrink Is In. And today, I have guests who are returning to talk about their new book. And those guests are Dr. Charles and Elizabeth Schmitz. If you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you'll remember that I spoke to the Schmitzes last year about their book, Golden Anniversaries. Let me give you some background on the Schmitz. They are America's number one love and marriage experts and multiple award-winning authors. They have helped audiences around the world answer questions about love, marriage, and relationships. Their distinguished careers include over 65 awards, 350 books, articles, and manuscripts, 1,000 speeches, and frequent media appearances. With 26 years of research on relationships and successful marriage on six continents of the world and their own 43-year marriage, the doctors know what it takes to make a relationship work. Today, we are going to talk about their new book, Building a Love That Lasts, which provides more surprising insights on creating successful relationships. The book reveals how to sustain a long-term love marriage, in addition to exploring the seven key ingredients that define a successful marriage: togetherness, truthfulness, respect, and kindness, staying fit, joint finances, tactile communication, and surprise and unpredictability. The authors have included hundreds of insightful and practical interviews with happy couples. Elizabeth and Charles also have a new website, www.simplethingsmatter.com, and a new blog called Building Great Marriages for Psychology Today at www.psychologytoday.com. And now, let's meet the Dr. Schmitz. Folks, we're back again with Dr. Charles and Elizabeth Schmitz, who have a new book called Building a Love That Lasts, The Seven Surprising Secrets of Successful Marriage. And not only that, they've launched their new website, simplethingsmatter.com, and are doing a blog for Psychology Today, psychologytoday.com, Building Great Marriages. So, Charles and Elizabeth, welcome back to The Shrink Is In.
Hey, we're glad to be here, Howie.
Glad to be here, Howie.
Thanks. And you know what? I'm glad that you guys are out there and sending this message that marriages can be successful and they take a little work, but your experience, you've been married 43 years?
That's right.
Absolutely.
I'll be 44 in August.
Right. So you guys are doing something right. And just to remind my audience, if they haven't heard the earlier podcast that we did in 2008, Charles and Elizabeth have performed 26 years of research on relationships and successful marriages on six continents. I had an award-winning book last year called Golden Anniversaries. And so this year they have this new book and obviously the new website and the blog. So they've continued their work on how to make marriages successful. And have come up with, as I said, the seven surprising secrets of successful marriage. So out of all the years and interviews you've done, what would you say are the three most important things you've learned?
Well, you know, the most important thing that we've learned with all of these couples on six continents is understanding what makes love and relationships last is actually pretty simple.
But the trouble is, too many people are unwilling to do the simple things required to make their relationship work, or worse yet, they haven't learned what those simple things are.
These successfully married couples always tell us that being in love is easy. Mm-hmm. It's making love last that takes a lot of hard work. And the important point is that successful love and relationships are an accumulation of having done the simple things. You know, the simple things matter. And if we could drive home only one point to people when we speak to them or talk to them in groups or whatever, is that simple lesson. You got to do this stuff day in and day out to make it work. You have to build a successful relationship. It's like building a house. You know, it's kind of one brick at a time, and you mm-hmm. build it. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so important. And if people are unwilling to do that, then their relationship is not going to reach the potential that it has in front of it. So simple things matter.
Could you define some of these simple things? Because I think people see them as mystical almost, and you're right, they're not. But what would you say are kind of like the big keys that people should pick up on?
Absolutely. It's simple things like a simple kindness of saying thank you when your spouse does something lovely for you. It's snuggling longer in bed before you get out of bed, taking that little extra moment just to give your spouse a hug. It's being gracious with your time with each other and generous and making sure that you give time to each other and you take the time for each other.
And, you know, it's listening and taking the time to understand what they're trying to say to you. You know, and it's being respectful to people. Our favorite story that we've heard in the past year, we call it the donut story. And if I could digress just a second, I want to tell that to you because mm-hmm. I think it really illustrates this point. The donut story goes like this. He and she go to the donut shop, and he says, "What kind of donut do you want?" And she says, "Well, I'd like to have maybe a French cruller and sugar covered." So he orders her a chocolate donut.
Mm-hmm.
Or he says, "What movie would you like to go to?" She said, "Well, I think I'd like to see It's Complicated or Up in the Air." And he buys tickets for Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
It's that sort of thing. It's not listening, or worse yet, it's not respecting the opinion of your spouse or the one that you purport to love. It's a simple thing, being respectful and showing acts of kindness and listening and opening doors and paying attention. I mean, those things are simple. So they're really not so mystical. It's the things that most people, if you draw to their attention, they'll say, "Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. I do that, or I wish I'd do more of that."
A lot of times I forget. In other words, they thought, "Well, I knew better. You didn't need all those calories," or "I thought this movie was better, the reviews were better," but they don't discuss it. They just make the decision because of the lack of respect. And without thinking, they get in a habit of acting in a way that really disrespects who they're married to. And those little simple acts either build up the happy chips and the chips that make that foundation of the marriage work, or they take away from their bucket and they land themselves into a negative cycle of not being able to count on each other for those little things.
You know, sometimes I find that when I talk to couples that what they do is they treat people outside the marriage better than their partner.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say to them, would you ever say that to somebody who you work with or someone who you had a relationship outside the house? And they say, "Oh, no, I would never do that."
But they say it to their spouse.
Right.
And they get in this cycle of negativity. And that's the thing that we've had to really think about and that doesn't happen in these successful marriages. When you see these people constantly with the negative, "Oh, I got home from work and I took it out on my spouse and then we argued and then we did this and we did this," and it keeps building. What we always say is upend expectancy. When it starts, turn the table. Talk to them about something that they do that's really terrific. Talk to them about one of their strengths. Or say, "I know you had a rough day. Let's talk about it," instead of escalating. And it's, again, those simple actions, those simple kindnesses. And again, just like you said, acting as if you would to a coworker or a best friend, because that's the person you should be acting as your best friend who you're married to.
Mm-hmm.
I think Liz would agree with me on this. When we talk to these successfully married couples, the one really simple thing that they do, these successful couples, is they touch each other.
Mm-hmm.
They touch each other often. You can see them when you interview them. They're reaching over and putting their hand on their spouse's knee. They're making body contact. They're tapping each other on the back. You know, husband said to us, "If I pass my wife 100 times a day in the house, I touch her 100 times a day." Because touching is a very human thing. We see it in all these successful marriages. It's acknowledging someone's presence, and it's saying, "I love you so much, I simply must touch you."
Mm-hmm.
That's a simple thing. There's nothing complicated about that. You know, kissing your spouse and hugging your spouse and doing it routinely and every day and when it's convenient and when it's not and when it's inconvenient, you know, because it says so much and it builds that sort of a feeling of relationship that's so necessary to be successfully married or to be successful in any relationship.
I want to remind the audience that I'm talking to Dr. Charles and Elizabeth Schmitz. They have a new book, Building a Love That Lasts. They have a new website, simplethingsmatter.com, and a new blog, Building Great Marriages, on psychologytoday.com. I just have to ask another question, because to me, the core issue and the core foundation of every relationship is based upon, from my point of view, one word, and that is trust.
Oh, yeah.
And the ability to trust your partner is so important in all of the relationships that I work with, because if they can't trust their partner, you know, what else do they really have? And so how do you approach or deal with trust in the couples, or how do they deal with trust as you see them?
Oh, let me tell you, that is the one key factor, the foundation factor. When we talk to these couples, they trust each other with their life, with their fortune, with everything that they know to be sacred. They would absolutely not believe that their spouse would do anything to hurt that trust. And that is the foundation and the underlying part of all of these relationships in these successful marriages. And the fact is that they would not conceive of doing the worst thing that can happen in a relationship, having a extramarital relationship and having an infidelity. Not because the extramarital relationship is so bad. What's so bad about it is the breaking of the trust.
Mm-hmm.
And the once that trust is broken because of the lying that goes with it, because of all the things that surround that act, it is the most damaging to that relationship and the hardest to ever repair.
We recently posted a blog and then a related article right after the Tiger Woods thing.
Mm-hmm.
And because people were saying to us, well, you know, you can fix these relationships that are plagued by infidelity and the like, and we look at them and say, no, we think you're wrong about that. Because does some of them make it? Maybe some do. Do they ever trust each other to the level that's required in a relationship again? No,
mm-hmm.
I would offer to say. And you know, this notion of kind of a, we call it Tiger Woods in an age of infidelity. And we said to people, don't be fooled and don't be foolish. Relationships that are the victims of betrayal, infidelity, and disloyalty almost always end in failure. Don't try to fool yourself into believing that, because trust, as you said so eloquently, is so fundamentally
mm-hmm.
the heart of these best and long-lasting and loving and successful relationships, that trust is will carry them through terrible times, through the death of children, through financial woes, and these are tough economic times for many people, but the trust will carry you through if you build that relationship step at a time, over time, and that you never violate that trust.
Speaking of difficult financial times, are there actions couple can take to strengthen their relationship during financial hardships?
Absolutely, and the nicest part about this is we've heard some just marvelous stories of couples who have really enhanced their relationship during those times, and from our interviews, our notes about these couples and their challenging times. And there are steps and actions that they have taken when they were in crisis, when these things were happening to them, that made a difference. And so what we did was kind of collect the most important of those. And when we start with it, we start with obviously the first most important one, which again gets back to that trust issue. It's teamwork. And that's that right up front when you get into financial problems, either you lose a job or your credit is bad because you've gotten yourself in too much debt, whatever the reason or a health situation causes financial problems, it's that you work that through together, and all those financial problems are your problems. They're not my problems or your problems. They are our problems together.
And so many people, I think, believe that long-time successfully married couples have not had challenges in their life.
Mm-hmm.
You heard every imaginable story. I mean, we lost a child. Others have lost children. They've lost jobs. They got transferred to a place in the country they didn't want to go. A terrible illness, parents, children dying, and people say, oh, these people live in la-la land, you know, they don't know what it's like to go through the tough time. Oh, no, contraire, as some mm-hmm. used to say. They do, in fact, know, and it's the relationship that they build that carries them through those times. You know, you communicate openly, you're in this together, you set common goals to resolve the money problems, and so forth. And that's the key, that you learn from these things, you learn these important lessons. Everybody's had to go through them, but trust, doing the simple things, all of these things that are at the heart of the matter, so to speak, make these relationships work, not just through the good times, but when things go south, and they do in every relationship.
And they talk to us about the blame game. The blame game doesn't work. It doesn't work in a successful marriage, and especially does not work in tough economic times. In other words, you can't wallow in self-pity. It's literally a wasted emotion. Mm-hmm. Either you get together, form that team effort, get those goals, those financial goals in place, and then work toward them together. But self-pity and feeling sorry about your situation and woe is me in financial situations absolutely with a couple won't work.
And these successful couples have told us, and we love this one because we like to celebrate success, said you have to celebrate success when things are tough. You know, just little successes. Sometimes it's paying off a credit card. You know, mm-hmm. or sometimes it's saying, we got 10 credit cards, let's throw 5 of them away. You know, we don't need that many. It's the little successes. It's finally, you know, you worked it out, you went to the bank, and you got a little extension on being able to make your car payment. And that's a little success. And most people that hold your credit, they recognize that times are tough sometimes, and they want to work with you. And if people will just take that step, get a success, celebrate that success, it's very important in tough economic situations.
As they work your way out of it.
You got to find, as I guess my mother used to always say, you got to see if there's light at the end of the tunnel, you know, and celebrate the successes that you have. Take your actions together. You know, do it today. Don't just wait for tomorrow. You have to address these issues.
Right.
And finally, the last advice that we have from these couples that's really important is during these tough economic times or any challenging times in the marriage, spend particular time and attention at renewing the marital relationship. In other words, work on the romance, work on the love for each other, work on celebrating what you have in your relationship and the support you have for each other, and that will help sustain you through those tough times.
There's one that we have added to our thought process now when people ask us this question. It has to do with the children part of it. Because a lot of couples along the way, you know, they have children and this is tough on kids sometimes because they can't have the new this or the new that, or they can't do this thing at school or whatever the case may be. And so we say to them, you must be very honest with your children. You know, sometimes you got to suck it up, you know, and if a kid gets mad at you for a little bit or thinks mom or dad is a failure or whatever, that's just part of the risk that you take. But if you're not honest with them, then they don't understand. They don't change. They don't change their habits. And so if you have children in the house, they need to understand that mom and dad are facing severe economic challenges. There's no point in hiding this fact from them. And these couples always tell us, and don't underestimate your children. They're a lot smarter than you think they are.
That's already the start of developing trust. You know, right.
Absolutely.
There. You know, the fact that, you know, if you can, as a kid, understand and trust that your parents are telling you the truth, that your judgments could be accurate. You know, because I have kids who have grown up in households where things were one way, but of course the parents would tell them, oh no, you're wrong. That's not really what's going on. And what happens is the kids grow up not learning or trusting their own judgment.
That's right.
Right.
But so if parents are honest, and I agree that they have to be honest, then what they're telling their children is, hey, this is how you handle children. This is how you handle relationships. This is how you develop trust and develop a communal spirit in the house by being, you know, an honest member of the community.
Absolutely. Very well said, Ellie.
So, yeah, I agree.
Great advice. Yeah.
You know, I used to tell people that the light at the end of the tunnel might not be the oncoming train you think it is.
It might actually be sunshine.
Right.
Or the glow of that pot of gold.
Yeah. And, you know, and I have people in my practice, you know, who I deal with all the time. And really, they're really stuck. And they just need to take one little step at a time. And there are lots of them now, even more than ever, because of the economic times we're in.
Oh, yeah.
We're you know, guys who were, you know, in lucrative fields, or long-term careers are just, you know, they're not making any money at all. And they just have to kind of rebuild themselves. You know, good thing the Census Bureau is hiring people now. Because I have guys who are highly educated and capable who would die to take that $18 an hour job, even though it's part-time. Because it's better than what they're doing now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's really tough out there.
And, you know, it's also another kind of a weird impact of this. It's very costly to get a divorce. Mm-hmm. So some folks are hanging together and
trying to make it work
and trying to rebuild that relationship because they don't have the luxury, et cetera, or whatever you want to call it in great times where you can just easily walk in and financially set up two households and do all the other things that go with separating. And two can live cheaper than one. And so for some folks, it is giving them a renewed interest in making the marriage work. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. I think I heard the other day that in New York State, the divorce rate dropped a third.
Wow.
Probably for that reason, that people can't afford it.
I'd like to, you know, I'm an optimist. I would love to say it's because they've read our book and they now know how to get it right.
Well,
but, you know, unfortunately, I'm a realist too, and it is probably because when you look at the cost of getting a divorce right now, that's something they just literally can't do right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, Howie, one of our passions in life, and this is really what sort of, you know, gets us up in the morning, is that we really want to make a difference in the lives of these people. You know, there's too much misery and suffering, too many people who can't live together, too many people who get married for all the wrong reasons, or people who, it's all about the sex, and then 6 weeks into the relationship, they say, oh, wait, there's a whole lot more to this relationship than
right.
that.
Right.
You know, and or they see all the telltale signs of this jerk, but they won't admit that he really is that way. But we would offer, if he's always the first one in line at McDonald's, if he doesn't open doors for people, if the kids and wife and grandma and grandpa eat after he's got his food, you know, all of these are telltale signs. If he says he loves dogs and kicks them, that's a telltale sign. The point is, people are starting to pay a lot more attention to people, and they're understanding that there are behaviors that they can model, that there are lessons to learn from successfully married couples or people with successful relationships. And mm-hmm. and so that optimism guides us. You know, people ask us this question all the time. Well, the divorce rate's 50%. And we say, almost indignantly, how many times do we have to say the divorce rate is not 50%? People keep repeating that as if it's a gospel or something. But the truth of the matter is, if you look at marriages per 100, divorces per 100,000 populations, if you look at those trend lines going back, the highest divorce rate was in the early 70s, late 60s, kind of the flower child generation,
right.
Vietnam, and all the things that caused, the turmoil and this and that. But it's been on a fairly steady decline since then. Where the divorce rate today, by almost anybody that pays close attention to the numbers, including us, is 40% or even less.
Mm-hmm.
So it has gone down.
You know, I agree. Probably it has gone down. And the other thing is that what you said earlier is that people don't, I believe, they don't do their homework. And I can't tell you how many patients I've had where they've been in relationships that I knew were fairly toxic. And I would say to them, look, you know, do your homework here. You know, get the information. Let's look at this person from almost the multi-generational aspect. You know, what's their family like? What's their grandparent situation like? What did they learn about relationships? How did they learn how to be a partner? Look at that information. You know, I don't know if you have out there the Cy Sims clothing stores. But
we do not in St. Louis, no.
Okay. So Cy Sims probably is a local, you know, New Jersey, New York clothing store. And it's a wholesale, you know, to the public kind of clothing store. And his motto is, an educated consumer is our best customer.
Oh, that's
perfect.
And so I use that line with my patients. I say, you know what? An educated consumer is a great customer. Be educated.
Oh, yeah.
That's so true.
And you know, if we call ourselves anything, Charlie and I really like to call ourselves educators, because that's our mission in life, is to help people understand what it takes to be successful in an marriage or a relationship for that matter. And if they can learn that, and then they can look at their relationship and model the things that make a relationship successful, and if they're willing to do the things that make it successful, it really can happen. Again, with the caveat that we always say, some marriages are poison and they shouldn't ever have happened in the first place. And people just need to get themselves out of it.
Yeah, most marriages maybe could be saved, but some of them aren't worth saving.
Right.
And learning what the difference is important as well.
Exactly.
You know, our old mentor was an ed psych guy, okay? He was an educational psychology person.
Mm-hmm.
And his name was Don Clifton. And Don Clifton was the president and CEO of the Gallup organization.
Mm-hmm.
And Don had started a company when he left the University of Nebraska, and formed a company called Selection Research Incorporated. And basically what he did was put round pegs in round holes in terms of people, put the right people in the right positions, you know, this sort of thing, matching personality characteristics and all that. But one of the outgrowths of that, they learned how to develop interview protocols.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to get the truth about answers to whatever the question may be. They used a lot of it, of course, with their public opinion research that they do and that they're more well known for. But the interview part was really important, and Don and he's passed away now. He died about 4 years ago, but he got, Liz and I started down this path by saying to us, the thing that you need to understand is that you learn about success by studying success.
Mm-hmm.
Learn about success by studying success. And that really stuck with us, because it really says, if you want to know something about successful marriage, go out and find great marriages and see what they look like. How do they sound? What do they feel like? How do they interact? What you know, and that's really what we've spent, well, not quite half of our life doing, but it's a long time.
It feels like it.
Yeah, it feels like it. And that's what we've been doing. And so after a while, you begin to see these commonalities.
And you know that our research, what we've done is we kept going further and further out. We started in the community, then went to the state, then we went across the nation, and then we hit every state, and then we branched out to countries, and then we made sure that we have covered 6 continents, and we're still trying to get to Antarctica to interview some scientists. That's our next goal.
But we're working on that, too.
But more than anything else, we really are.
It's a little cold out there.
We lunch next Tuesday with a guy that was the commander of the McMurdo base in Antarctica.
He wants to help us.
He lives in St. Louis, and by the way, he's a poet too.
Uh-huh.
And he's
got to do something up there in Antarctica.
He's got to do something.
Yeah.
So he got all, you know, he started writing about Antarctica. But we really want to go there and see if maybe he can help us. Our PR people are also working with National Geographic to see if maybe they would provide some level of support
that we can do a documentary for him. But more than anything else, what I'm saying is, it's our curiosity for what makes these great marriages work. And we were so sure that if it was in another country, or if it was in another culture, or if it was in another religion, that it would be different. And then about halfway through it, we kept saying, it's not different.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's the same. And then our last trip to Africa really convinced us, because we were pretty sure, because of the cultural differences, that there would be at least, there are nuances, we know, but we were expecting some deep differences. And again, the same caveats hold true. The same indicators for success hold true.
Yeah, this time we focused on interviewing Sunni Muslim couples in Morocco, in Tangiers and Casablanca. And
it was fascinating.
That was absolutely fascinating. And then to sit and listen to them, you know, there are some cultural nuances and the like. The Sunnis tend to be much more peaceful in terms of their outlook, I guess, more, what's the term, more spiritual. I'm not sure that's the right word. But and so in talking to one man and his wife in particular, his name was Alal. And when he started describing some things about their relationship and to hear her chuckle and then she chimes in and we're trying to hear all this, you know, he spoke pretty good English, so that helped us a lot. Sometimes we have to take interpreters. But we're looking at each other like, here we are in Tangiers, Morocco, and we could just as easily be sitting in St. Louis, Missouri or Beijing, China, you know, because what we're hearing, those fundamental things that make it work,
they're human qualities. They're human interactions.
Exactly.
And they're the same.
Right. So they're universals.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Good term. I like that.
Universals. Yeah, universals. Good term, Kelly. In fact, look at that term. That's a great term.
You can take it. It's okay.
We have two new quotes from you today we're going to use.
It's just these things are so much more universal than we thought when we started our research 27 years ago. We started out of curiosity. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, it's been absolutely fascinating to keep seeing the recurrence of these models that work.
Well, and we were part of that generation we were talking about. I mean, we are the Vietnam generation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember 1964, I remember being one of the first protest crews carrying my placard on the steps of Jesse Hall, you know, and feeling rather proud of myself. And then we were taking required ROTC, and I remember people throwing tomatoes at us and throwing stuff at us as we did drill. And I thought, that's not quite the way it's supposed to be, I don't think. And then I got drafted.
Okay.
You know, and the like, and I thought, oh man, I'm off to Vietnam. Well, the point of it is, that generation they were the children of Depression era parents, for the most part, who had survived great hardships and the like, and now we're kind of loose, and we like to stick flowers in the end of guns, you know, and things of this type, and be the flower children. And we thought that life was kind of loose and free. And then we woke up one day when we were asked to do a workshop. And he said, can you do this for me in in Jefferson City, Missouri? And we said, yeah, what's it about? And he said, well, it's a group of farmers and their wives, and they're interested in how to have a successful marriage. And so we worked on it. But the revelation for us, kind of the point of where I'm going, is when we took stock of all those friends that we had had during that era, that we've gone to undergraduate school with, we had gone to graduate school with, people that we'd gone to football games with or boating at the lake or whatever the case may be. And guess what? We were the only one of the 14 couples still married.
Mm-hmm.
This was on the occasion of our 18th wedding anniversary.
Oh, really?
That was a real shocker to us. That of the 14 couples, only one had made it to the 18th anniversary. So
that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it
causes you to reflect, and it causes you your curiosity to say, why us? Why are we still married? And why are we having a great relationship when everybody else around us has fallen apart? The people we hung with have fallen apart, and so that's what got us into this whole lifelong, you know, it's been our whole adult life looking at this and studying marriages, and it is the most fascinating, wonderful thing to hear these couples. And we do not do an interview with a successful couple. Now, we have some interviews with not so successful couples that aren't a joy to do, but the ones that are successful and truly have these great marriages, they're just a kick to do. It's wonderful to interview them.
We develop an interview protocol, really sort of following some of the models that we learned from Don Clifton. And it's worked very well for us because we start, for this book, we started with they had to be married 30 or more years. We interviewed people 30 to 77 years, I think. The protocol then answers the question, are they successfully married? Are they happily married? And that's the real key. There are people out there, as you well know, how in your practice, been married a long time. They really don't like each other.
It's an arrangement, not a marriage, in my book.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Exactly. Like that couple we interviewed in Rio de Janeiro.
Oh my! They've married 54 years, and I really believe they hated each other.
These people hated each other. I mean, when you say who are your best friends, they name off 10 people, but it wasn't each other. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you began to discover in the interview that they did everything separately. They
right.
slept separately. They socialized separately. They did, but they had standing in the community, and that's.
They were the recommended couple for all of Rio.
Yeah, they were the recommended.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I've had couples literally who lived in different states.
Yeah.
Yeah. These folks should have.
Right. They and it was an arrangement. I mean, basically for either financial reasons or, you know, quality of life reasons, neither one of them were going to change their status. And so technically speaking, they were married, but they had really nothing to do with one another.
Yeah.
Pretty remarkable. I don't know how they think they can make those relationships work.
I think they had no intention of making that work.
Good point.
I think we're learning a lot here.
Anyway, Charlie, Liz, we're out of time. And it's been great. We could talk for hours on this, but unfortunately the format of my show doesn't really lend itself to that. So
Right.
So I want to remind the audience that I'm talking to Dr. Charles and Elizabeth Schmitz, and they have a new book, Building a Love That Lasts, and a new website, simplethingsmatter.com. And you can catch their blog, Building Great Marriages, on psychologytoday.com. So, Charlie, Liz, I want to thank you again. It's been great talking to you again, and I appreciate everything that you're doing and hope that people pick up your book and learn from it.
Hey, thanks, Howie.
You have a great time, and stay warm, because it's supposed to get down to about zero here tonight.
Well, it's cold in New York, too, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't like the cold too much, but, you know, it's either that or I have to move.
Don't move. It's a nice place. We like New York.
So I want to thank you again, and until next time, this is Dr. Howard Gerf for The Shrink Is In.
You have been listening to The Shrink Is In, and your host has been Dr. Howard Gerf. If you want to learn more about Dr. Gerf, go to his website at www.drsgerf.com.